Okay, I wanted to talk about something which is relevant to our efforts to create as much schus as possible nowadays. So we have, from a spiritual perspective, I think two points of focus. We've been very focused on achdus, which we've seen many beautiful and maybe astounding examples of, and we've been very focused on trying to create as much schus as possible. So I thought a illuminating sugya to focus on a little bit is the question of what happens when those two things come in conflict with each other. Essentially, the sugya of fighting with other people over mitzvos, over having the opportunity to do a mitzvah, to fight with someone else over that opportunity, that you should have the schus to do the mitzvah, which was a sugya that appeared in Daf Yomi a little while ago. We're already a few days away from it. It was a Gemara in Maseches Kiddushin on Daf Nun Gimel, and it's a sugya that appears in a few other places as well. Gemara Maseches Yuma on Daf Lamed Tes, and in Chulin on Daf Kuf Lamed Gimel, which we'll cite in a moment. It's a context which first is codified in Shulchan Aruch, and we'll explain how it's derived from the Gemara, but it addresses this question of how there can sometimes be tension between people over who has the opportunity to perform a mitzvah. So the Rama Paskins in Aruch Chaim in Siman Nun Gimel, that there is a rule that Shliach Tzibur has to be somebody who is pleasing to the Tzibur, and therefore he shouldn't try to force himself upon the Tzibur, and he shouldn't try to take over the Omud. And commenting on that, so the Magen Avraham has a general rule that Ein lehiskotet ba'avor shum mitzvah, that we shouldn't quarrel, we shouldn't fight over a mitzvah, you shouldn't get into a contest with somebody else, that you should be the one to have the amud. That's an issue that often comes up, especially because people who are in Avelis, what's called Chiyuv, so they feel it's very important that they should be the one to be standing there. And they sometimes come to arguments with other people over who should have that schus. So the Magen Avraham says, here is a general rule, Ein lehiskotet ba'avor shum mitzvah, you shouldn't fight over a mitzvah. And this is based on a phrase that appears in those three Gemaras we just mentioned, that you find there this concept, that hatznuim moshchem esidehim, that those who are refined will pull back their hands. And Gemara has different sections, different citations in different places, but essentially the whole passage, as it appears in the Gemara in Maseches Yuma, talks about the distribution of the Lechem Aponim and how the Kohanim would have to see how much they could get, and only small portions would be able to reach each Kohen, because there wasn't that much to go around. And those who were more pushy, Gargarim, the Gemara says, so those who were pushier, they would take, and it seems to be a negative characterization. V'hatznuim, those who were more refined, Moshchem Esidehim, so they would pull back. And that seems to be the more proper kind of behavior. And the Rambam in Hilchos Bikurim, so he codifies that that is the proper way to be, and that the Kohen shouldn't push to receive Matnas Kahuna, nor should he even verbally demand them, but he should be refined in his way in terms of how he receives them. So coming off of that, the Magen Avraham formulates this as a klal, that one shouldn't fight for mitzvos, and one should be more refined and dignified. And if it comes to a need to clash with others, so one should hold back. Vatznuim moshchem esidehim. So there is some debate over this, and the Chassam Sofer notes in his Hagos to the Shulchan Aruch, and also in his Tshuvas, a point that Machzah Shekel initially raises, that it's not so obvious that there's a proof from that Gemara, because if you look at the Rishonim over there in Yuma, particular at Rashi and at the Tosfos Rishonim, so it sounds like the issue is that there wasn't the possibility for every Kohen to get a kezias of the Lechem HaPanim. So it's a good question if we want to figure out what the mitzvah of Achilas Kodshim is. So presumably they would need to have a kezias in order to have a full mitzvah. So maybe it wasn't possible for all the Kohenim to get a full mitzvah anyway. So it wasn't really worth fighting over. But maybe if there was a full mitzvah opportunity, so then maybe it would have been worth fighting over. So how does the Magen Avraham know that you can see from there that as a general rule, we shouldn't fight over mitzvos? Maybe if there was a full mitzvah to be had, so then maybe they would have fought over it. So the Machzor HaShekel, in making this observation, he does concede some points to the Magen Avraham. He says, but maybe still, these Rishonim, when pointing out that there wasn't a full mitzvah to be had, but maybe they would acknowledge that the full mitzvah would only be worth going for if it wasn't necessarily going to actually result in a definite fight. But if there was a definite fight, maybe then even a full mitzvah wouldn't be worth undergoing a definite quarrel for. And maybe there are other kinds of considerations. Others push back, only metaphorically, not literally, against the Machzor HaShekel here. And they note that that phrase appears in a few passages, not only in that Gemara in Yuma, where it's clear that we're talking about less than a shir. So it's a broader klal, and it's not only when there's less than a full mitzvah. So there is some interesting back and forth about this. And there is an interesting discussion as well, specifically in the writings of the Tshuvas Machane Chaim, of Reb Chaim Sofer. And initially, in a first tshuva, he has about this in Chelek Aleph, in Siman Lamed Hei. So he considers there might be a difference between a mitzvah where you have a chazaka in doing it and a mitzvah where you don't, and that maybe there's some indication that if you have a chazaka, that maybe it may be worth standing up for your right to do it. But his son, who wrote the Sefer Taras Chaim, in his commentary on the Shulchan Aruch, commenting on this Magen Avraham, so he notes that his father has another tshuva, which we'll talk about in more length in a moment, where his conclusion seems to be that across the board, you don't fight over mitzvos, and that the general policy is that Dracha Darchei Noam, and that is going to be your schar, that your schar comes from the attitude of Dracha Darchei Noam, and that ultimately that is the Ratzon Habore, that we understand that if we're looking to fulfill a Kadosh Baruch Hu's will, it is defined by Dracha Darchei Noam, and that is ultimately what we're looking for, especially because in particular in these types of areas, when we're talking about in the context of the Magen Avraham, who was commenting on the Ramah, we're talking about a Chovas HaTzibur and who's going to perform the Chovas HaTzibur, so it's going to happen anyway. So the idea that you should be the one specifically to have the schus to do it, so then all the more so. But it could be that even if it's a personal chiyuv, we may also say that Derecha Darchei Noam, and that maybe there is a position of onus here, that if you're not able to get your hands on the mitzvah, so then maybe we would say that you're an honest and that you're not able to fulfill it, so we should count it as if you are in fulfillment. So there is a longer tshuva of the Machane Chaim in Siman Yutes and Chelek Gimel, where he talks about these issues at greater length, and that's why his son, the Taras Chaim, said that ultimately his maskana is that even if you have a chazaka on the mitzvah, so it's not something that's worth fighting for. And the tshuva is long. He goes through many different angles, but it's very fascinating to consider. So there is a comparison to be drawn here. Reb Moshe Feinstein has the tshuva as well, where he draws the comparison to material needs, that normally we do say that chayecha kodmin, that when it comes to material needs, so the Gemara in Bava Metzia tells us about the machlokas between Rabbi Akiva and Ben Patur, that if you have two people who are traveling in the desert, and one of them has a jug of water, and there's only enough for him, and the other one is not going to be able to survive without it, so the opinion of Ben Patur was that you have to share with the other guy, even though there's not enough for either of you. But nonetheless, so you shouldn't see the other guy die because you're not going to share with him. And the opinion that we follow is the opinion of Rabbi Akiva, even though he is the one so associated with the Ahavta L'Recha Kamocha Zekal Gadol B'Torah. But still, at the same time, says Rabbi Akiva, Chayecha Kodmim L'Chayecha Vercha, that you have to maintain your own ability to stay alive. So Moshe writes that this is true also in spiritual matters. We also say Chayecha Kodmim, but nonetheless, that doesn't necessarily transfer to saying that one should fight over mitzvos, because the context of the Gemara is that you have already the jug of water, so the question is whether you're obligated to give up your jug of water to somebody else. So fine, so you're not obligated to do that. You have to protect your own life first. But to say that you should pull it away from somebody else, that would be a very different thing. So even if we acknowledge that this Gemara is true when it comes to spiritual needs as well, so that would still mean that you could hold on and keep the mitzvah for yourself. But to say that you should fight for somebody else, fight with somebody else for the spiritual schus, that would be a different story, and it wouldn't extend that far. But the Machna Chaim also considers the implications of that Gemara to another extent, because he talks about the question of if somebody has the ability to perform a mitzvah behidr. He's talking about, in his context over there, say somebody has a candle for Shabbos, and he can keep the candle going much longer, keep the candle going all night, which is a hiddur, so you have the candle there, so you're not going to be in darkness for the entire night. And somebody else is not going to be able to have a candle even for his suda. So should you give him a part of the wick or part of the oil that you would have, and so you'll also only have for the suda, but he'll also be able to have for the suda. So he notes that if you take the comparison to the Gemara about Rabbi Akiva, so when it comes to saying Chayecha Kodmim, so presumably we'd say that yes, you have the right to stay alive, and you're not obligated to share your water with the other guy. That means you won't be able to stay alive. But if you could stay alive and go way beyond that, then you'll be more than alive, you'll be satisfied, and your friend is going to starve to death, so then presumably you are obligated to keep him alive and not satisfy yourself beyond life-sustaining needs. And that's because of lo samar al dam reacha. So if you're already able to keep yourself alive, so then you will have to give the rest of your water to sustain the life of your friend and not violate lo samar al dam reacha. But then the question is, so what about when it comes to mitzvos? So should we say that the same logic applies to mitzvos? That if you have more than enough than you need to fulfill the mitzvah, and you're already at the hiddur level, so should you be obligated to give that extra to your friend to fulfill the mitzvah because he won't be able to fulfill the mitzvah at all? Is that directly parallel to the physical needs that we would say in the case of the water, that you're obligated to share your extra water so that he shouldn't die? So maybe not, because when it comes to a mitzvah, so then we have a concept of onus rachmana patre. When it comes to the physical needs of the water, if he doesn't get the water, he's going to actually die. But if he doesn't have what he needs for the mitzvah, so we'll say onus rachmana patre, it's as if he fulfilled the mitzvah. So maybe it's not your obligation to share what you need for the heder mitzvah. Maybe you should be able to do your heder mitzvah. And the fact that he can't do the mitzvah at all, okay, so he'll be off the hook. Onus rachmana patre. He won't be losing out. And you'll be able to do your mitzvah the way you want to. You'll be able to do your mitzvah behider. And then he goes on to suggest that maybe that's not really true, because the notion of onus rachmana patre, so it's a whole discussion in the Achronim what exactly that means. So that may mean that a person is not held responsible for neglecting a mitzvah that he can't do if he's unavoidably prevented. But we don't necessarily say that onus command ovid, that if you are prevented from doing a mitzvah, it's as if you did the mitzvah. Onas rachmana patre literally translates to mean that if you are unable to do the mitzvah, you are pater, you are off the hook, you are exempt from any liability. But kamanda ovid would mean it's as if you did the mitzvah. So is it literally as if you did the mitzvah? Presumably not. That would be a much bigger chiddush to say that just because you weren't able to do it and it's not your fault, that we actually credit you as if you did it. So if we want to actually be mezakeh your friend, so then we would say that you have to actually share your mitzvah opportunity with him. So then maybe it really is directly comparable to the physical resource of the water. And just like if you have more than enough to stay alive and the rest is extra, you'd need to give your water to the life-sustaining extent to your friend to keep him alive. And you can't say that it's as if he had it because it's a material need and he'll die without it. So too, when it comes to the basic mitzvah, if you have enough to do the basic mitzvah, so yes, Reach HaKodmim to that extent, but the hitter, that part, you can do without, and you should give that to your friend, because you can't say he's okay, it's onus command of it, because he won't have the actual schus, he'll just be off the hook, but he won't have an actual schus. And if you want to actually be mezakeh him, so then perhaps he needs to actually do it, and then you should share it with him. Hi.
Is this really a fair parallel to make, though? Because with the water, if I give it to him, then I don't have it. Right. Whereas with the mitzvah, if I give him something that he can do the base level mitzvah, I'm still able to do the base level mitzvah. It's not
right.
Him at the expense.
But I'm not able to do the hitter mitzvah. So that's where I'm losing out. But I thought you were going to say something else. I thought you were going to say, adarabba, you know, like a mitzvah is a schus to me also. So that's an extra reason to say should be more likely to have to give it to him. So when I give him the water, so then I don't have the water anymore. But when I give him the mitzvah, I have the schus of being mezakeh him. So then maybe that's another reason why I should have to do it. So that's also interesting, because that would be a good place to go with that. And then he goes on to say, he's not sure about any of this, he goes back and forth with a lot of the svaras, but he says also that maybe you could say the svara could then cut in another direction, that a person who is unavoidably prevented from doing a mitzvah, so then he is off the hook for not doing the mitzvah. But somebody who could be mezakeh his friend in doing a mitzvah, so that guy who doesn't have the ability to do the mitzvah, he'd be off the hook. But you, who could have helped him and chose not to, so then you're going to be held responsible for not helping him. So then you're going to have a liability on your hands for that. And that's a fascinating consideration. And in that context, he also talks about there's a literature which doesn't get into in such detail, but it comes up in the context of Hilchos Chanukah, which he alludes to briefly, the question of when somebody has, say, many candles for, say, somebody has just enough candles for, say, the third night of Chanukah. So he has three candles. He could light three candles for the third night of Chanukah, but his friend has no candles. So if he gives a candle to his friend, say two friends who have no candles, so the three of them can all fulfill the Iker candle, the Iker mitzvah of Ner Chanukah, which is one candle per night, so they could all fulfill the Iker candle, the Iker mitzvah, or he could just fulfill the mitzvah behider of lighting three candles. So there it's a discussion what to do as well. But there's the added element that the mitzvah of Persume Nisa that attaches to Chanukah, as when we talk about this, but that's an added aspect as well, that since Chanukah is about Pirsum, so one could also say that part of the mitzvah is to make sure that as many people as possible are doing it, because that's a part of the mitzvah, to make sure that it's publicized. But here also, part of it, that you want to be mezakeh other people, so that also accrues to you. So that's maybe an additional reason to do it. And then in the context of that tshuva, so he also notes that the objection that the Machzor Shekel and others had, that in the Gemara in Yuma, that there wasn't a complete mitzvah that would have come to these Kohanim, that maybe that's why they didn't fight over it. So that, he thought, maybe wasn't necessarily so compelling, because since we assume that there is a notion of a Chatzi Shir, so it's a whole discussion in general whether the concept of a Chatzi Shir by a mitzvah, but many thought that there was, so then there's some value. So if there's some value, so then maybe it would have been worth fighting over that value. So apparently the Chiddush of the Gemara is that no, even whatever value there is, it's still a better value not to fight over it, and therefore the Magen Avraham legitimately comes to that conclusion that we shouldn't fight over any mitzvah, and his raya is correct. He also discusses a little more of a papulisha point in the context of that, that maybe you could say that the Magen Avraham's point is that davka, because there was not enough shiurim per kohanim, that maybe that's why you would have thought they should have fought over it. So whoever would fight over it has the potential of getting the shear, so that's why you need to fight in order to get the shear. And still, the Gemara says that it was praiseworthy to withdraw your hands and not to fight over it, because the alternative would have been, you would have thought that, okay, either I fight and get the shear, or if I lose the fight, then at least I fought, so then I could say, all right, so I have the effort, and I'm an honest in the fact that I didn't get it. So, Mimanavshach, if I win the fight, then I have the whole shear. And if I lose the fight, then I'm an honest because I tried as hard as I could, and I lost, and I didn't get. So, I'll get the credit for the eating either way. And we see that, no, the point is that the bigger schus is not to fight, and racha darche noam. And that's essentially the point. And this is a mentality which we see is the dominant mentality that emerges, even though, practically speaking, many people certainly don't internalize this sensitivity. And it's deeply ironic, because especially in the context of Tila B'Tzibor and leading the Tzibor, when we're hoping that it should be a schus for a nifter, Rav Avadya Yosef points this out in his Tshuvas, but it's also an idea which you could have thought would be self-evident, but he talks about in the context of a family that was fighting over a memorial. And it's certainly relevant also to those who are fighting over the opportunity to lead the tzibur in davening. So it could have been self-evident that it's a much bigger schus for the nifter that there shouldn't be fighting. So the more that there is harmony, and the more that there is an atmosphere of shalom, so if you're looking to be mezakeh the nifter, so this will definitely be a much bigger schus than having that extra kaddish or that extra leading of the tzibur. And that is something that certainly these poskim thought was self-evident, and halavai should be self-evident to others. He also notes in his Tshuvas, Bavaja, that the klal of the Magen Avraham is quoted by the Chidah and is quoted by many other poskim, and certainly seems in his understanding to be the dominant understanding, and he thinks that certainly to be the clear halacha. And this is an attitude that we find in many other places in Shas, in addition to the idea of Derecha Darchinon. We know that the Gemara says in Ksubis, the attitude of Beis Hillel in response to Beis Shammai's objection, when Beis Hillel say, you should always say Kal Nova Chazuda, regardless of whether you think it's necessarily objectively true or not. And Beis Shammai says, what about Mitvah Sheker Tirchak? And Beis Hillel's response seems to be not directly addressing the point. Beis Hillel's response is, La'ola mehidaito shalada merevis mebrios. A person should always have the attitude that gets along with people. And the way the Rambam codifies that, so Rav Kook notes that he seems to understand it as an aspect of Kiddush Hashem. That's a part of why that is. And Mishnayos and Pirkei Avos make this point also, that in addition to saying we should always accept people with a smile, it actually happens to be Beis Shammai's view, but in addition, the Mishnah also tells us that the path that is Tiferes Lebrios and Tiferes Lehabore is the ideal path. So this notion is a theme that we find throughout, and therefore this is a meta principle which directs how we should be looking for Shkuyas overall and sets the tone. And so this plays out in a number of other ways. The whole notion of being respectful to people in terms of the physical treatment while we're pursuing mitzvos. It's noteworthy that the Ramban has a comment in Chumash that when Yosef got into trouble with Eishes Potiphar, he got framed with Eishes Potiphar, so a part of it is because he was caught holding her garment, and she was caught holding his garment, rather, and therefore she was able to frame him. So the Ramban discusses that he was presumably stronger than her, so why didn't he just take it back? Why did he let her hold on to his garment, which allowed her to frame him? And he could have saved himself quite a lot of trouble. And the Ramban discusses there, and Rav Shimon Chazal Berurah in the Sefer on Chumash L'Sam Derech expands on this, that yes, he could have physically pulled it away from her, but he was respecting her personal space. He's not a bully. And that whole sensitivity was a part of the refined character of Yosef, and that's something that we see is a aspect of what it means to be that kind of an individual, and that's the kind of character that we're supposed to emulate. So the idea that even our pursuit of mitzvos has to be done in a way that is not querulous and is not fighting with others and is respectful of others' sensitivities and can't come at the expense of others is an attitude that we find throughout in halacha, even when we might think otherwise. So, for example, the Mishnah in Bava Kamma and the Sugya in Bava Kamma and the Aflam Beis. So it sounds on the surface that there is a patur of nezikin when one is pursuing a mitzvah, which the Gemara calls ratz brishus. So the Gemara says that if somebody is running around on Erev Shabbos and he ends up being mazik something or somebody, so then there is a p'tur because it was ratz brishus, because Erev Shabbos, the Gemara also talks about Ner Chanukah, so then he's exempt because he is pursuing the mitzvah, is ratz brishus. So on the surface, it sounds there like you're exempt from the damage that you cause because you are pursuing the mitzvah. But as the Chavos Yoreh points out, the later Sfarim discussed at more length, that's hard to believe because that would create a very dangerous situation for people. It's true about this also, the disco rabbi, Yitzchak David Grossman, so his father, Yisrael Grossman, has tshuvas called the Netzach Yisrael, where he has a tshuva about this, and basically what the Chavos Yoreh explains is that it's not really a p'tur because you're involved in a mitzvah, because, first of all, if you know, even if a person was completely onus when he's mazik somebody else, so adam ha-mazik ba-onus is generally chayiv. It's a machlok, it's rishonim about if it's onus gomer, but some of the rishonim hold that even complete onus, when you're mazik, you're chayiv for. So the fact that you're pursuing a mitzvah presumably shouldn't be better than onus, although there's what to talk about how to understand that sugya. That's what it sounds like on the surface. So the way many explain the idea of ratz brishus is that when there's a mitzvah that everybody's involved in, like preparing for Shabbos or Hanukkah, so then everyone knows that it's a more dangerous environment, and then there's a responsibility for the nizak to protect himself more. So then that changes the atmosphere for everybody. But if it's a mitzvah that just you're pursuing yourself, so then there is no such p'tur. There was a whole exchange of letters among contemporary mechaverim of Sweet Spitz, who wrote the Sefer Mishpatei HaTorah. It's an exchange of letters with the author of the Sefer V'Darashta V'Chakarta, where he notes that you have to say it like this, otherwise everyone's basically going to have to walk around in body armor because we have to figure out how to legally obtain some. But you have to protect yourself because somebody, you never know who on the road is on their way to a bris or to a shir or to late for davening, and everyone's going to be vulnerable to anybody who's speeding down the road. It can't be that way. So presumably there's no general p'tur of pursuing a mitzvah. It's just that when that mitzvah is one that everybody's involved in, so then there is a elevated level of busyness and of haste that could cause danger. So then there's a p'tur associated with that. And also you find, similarly, the Rishonim in Sukkah and Daf Mem Hayim and Aleph, there's a Tosfos over there that talks about that when pursuing the Simcha of Sukkot, Purim they talk about, so there was a general exemption for certain minor acts of property damage, maybe of property theft, that was associated with the Simcha of those days. But if you look at the way that that's codified in the Rama and some of the later Svarim, so the quote from the Tosfos and from the Mordechai and from the Aguda and from the other Rishonim, that it's clear there also that it's not because there is a mitzvah, so that lets you off the hook, and you don't have to worry about other people's property or other people's safety when you're pursuing a mitzvah. But it's that when there's this joint experience of celebrating Purim, so then, because everybody wants to celebrate happily, so they have a general attitude of mechila, because they know that they're not going to be able to have a good time at the Purim party if everyone's going to sue. If you drop a little bit of wine on the carpet, then the host is going to sue you, so they're not going to have such a great time. So there's a general attitude of mechila at the environments such as those. But it doesn't mean that the mitzvah itself allows you to do whatever you want. And even within that, as Rama notes, and there's others that note after him, that if it's a significant hezek, so then if it's a significant damage, so then it is, there is going to be a chiyuv, it's going to be more than what people can be expected to be mochel, and that it's proper to pay anyway, even when there is mechila, and that the Beis Din can decide that this is something more than what they would have had expected, and that if it's a personal injury, or if it's you hurt somebody's feelings, so then it's more than that, that's not something that's considered to be allowed. So it's clear that the pursuit of Simchas Purim or Simchas Sukkot or Simchas Chasim Nikala is not a blank check to do whatever you want. It's because there's an assumption of mechila in these contexts that is present and is limited, that allows a certain amount of toleration. But it's not that the pursuit of a mitzvah allows you just to forget about the rights of others and to do whatever you want. And there's also an interesting discussion how this impacts on, so clearly you can't steal from others in order to perform a mitzvah. What about Gezel Shena? So the whole concept of Gezel Shena is a little mysterious. We always talk about Gezel Shena if you've ever been to summer camp or to a Shabbaton. So your counselors tell you about the concept of Gezel Shena. So can you do a mitzvah at the expense of Gezel Shena? So first of all, what is Gezel Shena? This is a good question. So Pashtus is not actual Gezel, but it is some kind of prohibition. The Karen Ledavid has a tshuva, Siman Yud Ches, where he understands it's a detail of Onos Dvarim. Essentially, you're causing somebody emotional distress by disturbing their sleep. Avzam Nechemi Goldberg had an essay where he understood that it's a type of gezel in a broader sense, in that you're causing a person monetary loss the next day at work because he can't work efficiently because you disturbed his sleep the night before. So it's really more of a hezek or a gram hezek in that sense. So it's some type of offense, not actual theft. But the post can discuss about whether there's a heter to wake somebody up for their mitzvah. You know, essentially, if they're going to, let's say, miss on Kriyashma or something like that, so is there a heter to wake them up? And even there, they're not so sure. And they're machalic between mitzvah daraisa and mitzvah darbanin. Maybe Kriyashma, yes, and maybe tefillah not, or maybe it depends. If you know that they are makbid on this mitzvah, so then maybe you're allowed to assume that's what they want, and if not, not. So there's a whole discussion about that, but that's because it's for their mitzvah. But to wake them up for your mitzvah, that's not even what they're talking about. So that's itself an interesting discussion, but it also highlights, once again, that as much as we are looking to pursue zchuyos, and as crucial as that is, but to maintain the respect for other people's needs and other people's sensitivities is a crucial value as well. So at this highly sensitive time for Klal Yisrael, and at this time when we are highly attuned to these two spiritual goals, one of maintaining achdus and one of trying to increase zchuyos as much as possible, so we try to keep those two goals in harmony and try to do whatever we can to make sure that we are doing both of those goals, but doing them in synergy with each other. That we want to be marbis chuyos, but we want to do so in a way that increases achdus, not subtracts from it. And especially, if there are ways to do so that we look for zchuyos for the tzibor and to share zchuyos rather than try to get our zchuyos at the expense of the zchuyos of others, but that's something which, with the right kinds of awareness and sensitivity, is very possible to do. So I just wanted to call attention to some of these sugyas and to some of these discussions, which are quite fascinating, and to help us appreciate just how much we can kind of synergize these two concepts, and we can look for zchuyos in a way that are not inwardly focused, but are focused with that achdus in mind. And hopefully we should be able to increase zchuyos, yes, for ourselves, but also for all of Klal Yisrael together. And through that, it should be a joint elevation of zchuyos, and it should bring about yeshuas for all of Klal Yisrael and for all the world, the Karev B'Yameinu. And with that, we will go to the joint.